BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Right, Rugby Union Daily. It's Thursday evening and match week five, the big finale. Super Saturday is almost upon us with Wales against Italy, Ireland against Scotland and France against England. I am in Dublin building up to the Ireland game. And Sarah, you are in Lyon. So we're all over the place this pod.
Bonjour, Chris. Yes, I can tell you, I'm actually speaking to you right now at the England Hotel because I have been given a lovely little area outside by the pool. Looks very nice. A few leaves in it, but it's an Olympic length pool. It's actually called Lyon Plage. So we feel a little bit like the beach, but I am also wearing a coat and scarf as I talk to you. But it's very nice here, as you would only expect.
Nice. Well, the Hoover... it's just started around us here in Dublin. We are in the shadow. I love this spot where we stay in Dublin. We are, I mean, so close to the Aviva. You could, I mean, it's stone's throw, pitching wedge, all that kind of stuff. It's all been happening today, Sarah, with the team announcements. We're going to hear from George Ford on the pod. We're going to hear from a man who was part of the last Ireland side to go back to back in the Six Nations in Luke Fitzgerald. But teams being named left, right and centre. You know, England, a couple of tweaks with a change on the bench, but also Elliot Daly coming in for Faye Wabosso. France are unchanged. Ireland unchanged, but tweaks on the bench, as we'll discuss. Scotland, new centre, Stafford McDowell. Ben White's back at number nine. Wales named their team earlier in the week with the bombshell news about George North. So where do you want to start? We obviously do more on the England team with George Ford and Ireland and Scotland with Luke Fitzgerald. But what has leapt out from you today as all the coaches make their move?
For me, it was actually Scotland and the centres. That was quite a big call by Gregor Townsend at this point in the championship. I didn't necessarily see it coming, I think is the most sensible thing to say in this. And why would he start messing around with things at this point? I didn't necessarily think that Cam Redpath was responsible for what happened against Italy. So, yeah, Stafford McDowell coming in, making his first tournament appearance, the Glasgow centre, in round five. I mean, I don't want to talk about a Scotland side in crisis or anything like that, but it just does seem, you know, we know Tua Pulotu and Hugh Jones, the Huey Pulotu or whatever the combination name was that we gave them. It does just seem a little bit now, I don't know, it just seems very odd move for the final big game. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably to try and combat Aki and Henshaw. You know, they've got one of the biggest ball carrying midfields, haven't they, Ireland? You know, and Cameron Redpath, lovely player, was great off the bench at Murrayfield against England. So yeah, maybe it's just to give that little bit more support physically to Hugh Jones and Finn Russell. But yeah, what a challenge for Scotland coming here to Dublin, a place they've not won since 2010, and a place they've been on the wrong end of some tough score lines. I want to just mention George North, Sarah, because you know that did come a little bit out of nowhere. Him being recalled, we probably expected, but didn't probably expect him to call time on his international career, especially as he sort of started the new World Cup cycle and players like, you know, Dan Biggar and Johnny Sexton and Keith Earls and Ben Youngs and Courtney Laws all called it day after the World Cup. North started, played in the Six Nations. Obviously, something's changed in the last few months. He'll be now able to go to France with his family and really give that everything rather than worrying about international duty as well. But real end of an era. You know, they've been gradually retiring one by one, whether it's been Warburton, you know, quite a few years ago, the likes of Tipperick and Alan Wynne and Dan Biggar. Ken Owen's still around but not played for a while, but certainly that golden generation one by one exiting the international stage. And what a miss North will be. What, one of the all-time great Welsh players, you know, certainly in that conversation.
I find it really interesting, as you say, because I still think he's got rugby in him, but he has been on the international stage for 14 years. That's a long time. I think most people remember him perhaps for his performance, 2013 Lions, arguably. But I really found it interesting listening to that press conference he gave about, he spoke a lot to his wife, Becky, who, if people don't know, of course, she competed for Team GB at cycling. She won a silver medal at the Rio Olympics. And apparently he spoke to her and he said, you know, what was the moment you decided that you were going to quit cycling? She just said, when you know, you know. And I think that's what we hear repeatedly, actually, from top level international athletes. There just comes a point where you're like, okay, this is the moment, and you just have to go with that gut feeling. And clearly that's what he had, that gut feeling, you know, off to play in France. This is his moment to let go. But yeah, for Wales, you listing those names there, Chris, of those that have left Wales behind. If you look at this Wales team a year ago, it's unbelievable how much has changed. So yeah, it's crazy to think that, but as George North has said a few times, he's last man standing, and he is the one who's going to step away.
Yeah, and we'll see what Cardiff has in store. We'll see what Dublin has in store. We'll see what Lyon has in store. Interesting, France going unchanged. Interesting, England. It's interesting, England just making the one change. I think it's completely understandable. You know, they pulled out a great performance against Ireland. They have to make the one enforced change with Faye Wiboso absent, and if Borthwick, you know, he would have had the option of bringing someone in from left field slightly, whether that's Will Muir or Tom Roebuck, could have moved Freddie Stewart to the wing, but Daly started the first three. It makes total sense to play him, even if they'll miss that kind of carrying in traffic that Faye Wiboso provided. But if you're an England side that's craving that continuity and cohesion that they've often spoken about lacking, I mean, it makes total sense to do this if you're Borthwick, doesn't it? And bring in Manu back for what could be probably, maybe, likely his last England appearance. If he's off at the end of the season, which looks inevitable, and calls time on his England career, then he's going to get his moment in the Lyon sunshine. And what a servant he's been to English rugby, albeit with this kind of convoluted international career dogged by injuries. But what he has achieved in that time as well has been remarkable, not least reaching World Cup semi-finals and World Cup finals.
Yeah, don't you find it amazing how many caps Manu Tuilagi would actually have if he hadn't have had the raft of injuries? It is incredible to even consider. But yeah, as you say, Tuilagi brought in the bench, a little bit upset that the French team doesn't have his nephew in it, because I think we're all quite looking
He's playing for the 20s.
Exactly.
That's not fair, is it?
I know. But we're all quite looking forward to seeing that clash, because all the pictures have gone round in the papers over the last week. Do keep an eye out for them, of Manu basically babysitting for Solo. So yeah, absolutely gutted that that's not going to happen. But what I did want to say is, I've been listening into Steve Borthwick doing some other interviews before I came out and speak to you, and he has been asked, you know, have any players approached you about this will be their last time in an England shirt? And as we well expect from Steve Borthwick, straight bat, we've got a game to play. There's been no discussions like that right now. So any discussions around any players possibly retiring or going elsewhere, not to be discussed here today or ahead of this match.
Mm. And the challenge for England is how they perform when they've had a week of undiluted praise. You know, we saw how they reacted after being, you know, being written off against Ireland. They came out angry, but they also came out with that kind of that steely execution as well. It's been the complete opposite this week. So we'll see how psychologically they handle the sort of the contrasting build-up. Right, sorry, you're about to go and speak to George Ford. I'm going to grab Luke Fitzgerald, who's just coming into our hotel now, and we'll speak in a bit.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Okay, Sarah, I've been joined in our spot here in the shadow of the Aviva Stadium by Luke Fitzgerald, Six Nations winner. And Luke, the part of the last Ireland team to go back-to-back in the Six Nations when you did it 2014-2015.
Well, sadly, I had no part in the 2014 season.
Yeah, but you played in the final game of 2015. So that's the one that counts, you know?
I'll claim it if you're giving it to me, yeah. So, look, it'd be an amazing achievement, I think. Probably got a little bit carried away with ourselves. Look, based off the brilliant performances by the Irish team, and I think the quality that they have, not only in the coaching staff, but within the squad group as well. They've got about 30 to 35 guys they can call on who I think are top class internationals. So Irish rugby's in rude health. Two Grand Slams would have been nice. But probably good for the competition to think, you never hear me say this before, but that England won against us, and I'll probably never say it again. But it was a great game, I think, for the competition last weekend, obviously with Italy as well. So it hurt from an Irish perspective. Good for the competition. At least there's something kind of riding on this last game of the championship in the Aviva Stadium. It should be an exciting day. I expect Ireland to do the business.
So. Sure. We'll go through the team selections. Ireland and Scotland have named their sides. But just on the feel around Irish rugby, because as you mentioned, this time last week, it was kind of a little bit, but it was confident. It was almost triumphalous, isn't it? It was almost like, well, you know, this could be back-to-back slams. And no one's done that in the Six Nations era. So how are things this week now that that's gone? And, you know, there's the great consolation of back-to-back titles, but it isn't quite the same.
dare I say it was roles reversed on BBC for the Irish. Definitely were a little bit triumphalist last week. Lots of chat about no English players getting in the Irish team, such a, you know, and things of that nature. I was glad I didn't go all out on a beat the spread chat. I thought it would be tight at 5 points, but I didn't see Ireland losing it, I must say. And you know, congrats to England on that one. So look, I think the mood was difficult this week. I think the squad did cop a little bit of flack, and I think given the performances that they've had so far in the competition, I think probably deserve it. I think they gave themselves, most importantly, a pretty hard going over on the Monday morning session. That was the kind of murmurs coming out of camp, and I'm sure the coaching staff had a look at themselves as well, because I feel like there was a couple of areas where they could have been better too. So I expect that you know, they bounce back this week. I'm sure they'll be wary of the Scotland team as well. Obviously had a difficult weekend themselves over in Rome. So yeah, I think both teams will be raring for this clash, and I expect it to be very, very physical. I think Scotland particularly, if they've looked back on a pretty dismal record against Ireland of late, I think they'll feel like they've really lost out in the physical stakes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's been obvious. So I'd expect that to have been a big chat for them this week. And to see what England did last week, there's a blueprint to really disrupt this Ireland game plan, which has been difficult to knock them off, in fairness. Even at points, New Zealand couldn't stop that attack, you know, for large periods. They did a great job, but couldn't stop it all game against Ireland in their best performance in a couple of years. So I think they'll be hard. It'll be hard to do, but I expect Scotland to have a look at those two games and say, okay, well, what happened here, you know, and I think there's areas they can definitely target, but I do think that bench for Ireland would be a difference. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, let's go through the team selection. No surprise, we've been hearing Andy Farrell talk at the stadium today. He's not the kind of guy to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And is his decision to go unchanged him saying, look, teams lose, it happens, better team won on the day, but it's still a good Irish side playing good rugby. On another day, they nick that game at Twickenham, and he's telling the same 15, not the same 23, which we'll touch upon, but the same 15, go out and put it right.
Yeah, and I think he's probably right. It's certainly not time to panic. Definitely a time to be introspective. You can see that with the changing of the bench. You know, I think with Ryan gone, while Henderson is an excellent player, obviously a Lion, you know, Ryan gives you just that little bit more ballast from the bench. You'd expect a bit more impact from him, whereas Henderson, to me, would be more an 80-minute guy. He'd be starting the game for me. He's a cool head, very experienced, and later in his career. If you're playing that 6-2 and you're looking for real impact, Henderson just doesn't give you the same that Ryan gives you, I don't think. So I think there's a bit of a change in composition there, and that's going to be interesting. I'm glad he's given the same team an opportunity to put right the performance last week. I think physically they were off the pace. I expect at home that for them to correct that in a spirited fight with this Scotland outfit. But it will be interesting to see that change in the bench composition, that 5-3 split he's gone to now. Given the trouble they had at line-out last week, or what I thought the stats were a little bit misleading, to be honest. Looked to me like England really got amongst them there at line-out time. They had similar struggles at the World Cup and against Wales actually the week before, or 2 weeks ago as well. So, you know, not having Henderson there, I understand it because of the impact, particularly in phase play. But at line-out time where they've struggled a little bit, if Byrne goes down and Peter Omani, for example, you know, doesn't, you know, because I think he'll be calling the line out if it's not Byrne. And if Peter Omani goes off on, say, 50 minutes or 55 minutes, like he's an older player and Baird has been a real impactful player, that does throw up a conundrum for you.
Because they're prioritising the power that
that's what I think
Baird
they're doing,
brings,
yeah,
rather than, say, like Ian Henderson, who would come on and run the line out.
That's exactly what I think is going to happen. Look, Henderson is very, you know, he's not the player of old, but he still gives you some impact. But it's just not the same as Ryan, or, you know, if you had, you know, McCarthy on the bench, because I think those two will probably be interchangeable, with Byrne never coming out of the team at the moment. He's just playing too well. So it's going to be interesting what happens there. Ireland need to bounce back. The line-out has been very, very important to this Irish team and for Irish teams for a long time, since the O'Connell days, when it was kind of, he had that kind of mercurial line-out calling ability, and ability to disrupt others too. It's a really important part of the game plan. They launch a huge amount of attack off that. I think Ireland have a very, you know, they have a good kicking game as well. They like to put pressure on teams, and they like to be attacking there too. They often turn down penalty kicks in front of the post because they back their line out. That's kind of deserted them over the last little bit since the World Cup. So, yeah, to not prioritise the line out, in my opinion, a little bit of a risk. In saying that, I understand it, and I expect them to think that, I presume they think they've got enough in the tank and they'll get the calling right this week to have a good performance at night and a secure ball there. And they think that it's more important to have someone who's probably, you know, able to impact the game more in open play and in long phases of play, which Baird, in fairness, like, what an athlete mm-hmm. he is, like an absolute luxury to have on the bench.
A word on Calvin Nash. He took a nasty one, didn't he, right at the start of that England game before the first England try. He's turned around to play. Clearly, you can, you know, pass your second HIA, and I'm sure Ireland have done everything by the book, but optics-wise, and, you know, we don't know the full story, so it's probably unwise to really speculate, but would you have understood if Ireland were to stand him down? It's a tight turnaround. Tricky one, isn't it? But, you know, it did look quite a heavy blow. He was out cold, and now 6-7 days later, he's playing another test match.
Yeah, look, I suppose we've got to trust the medical staff, you know, and that, you know, knowing the personalities there, I'm sure the player's health will absolutely supersede any decision that they make, and they'll have gone through all the protocols. And I think at this point, we do probably have to rely on the technology. I'm reluctant to say what I kind of feel because I'm just not an expert in the area. Mm-hmm. Am I reluctant? No, I will say. Sorry, I am going to say. I'm going to backtrack exactly what I said. I think it's not great optics, I think. And they probably had a ready-made sub in Gary Ringrose, who doesn't play on the wing a lot, but has played a bit. And they could have brought McCluskey in. I think the team doesn't lose too much there. And you trust the medics, but I just wonder at some point, would you just err on the side of caution? It did look like a very heavy blow to me. Just, I wonder what they've been better off, and for his career, obviously, going forward, because it can impact you in ways you don't know. But as I said, I know the personalities involved, so I know they've done the tests, and I know they're being guided by the technology, which is what we want as well. So, yeah, we hope he's all right. I'm sure he is, if the medics are putting him out there, and wish him all the best. He's actually had a great competition, gone about his business nice and quietly. As a winger myself, I know how much pressure is there, and I've been really, really impressed with Nash and how he's just kind of filled in that role that Mac Hansen, who has been a huge player for this team, that kind of void he's left. I haven't really noticed it as much because of Nash being so effective. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it was only a couple of years ago, wasn't it, that World Rugby extended the stand down from 7 to 12 days, but then there are eventualities where you can, you know, pass your second HIA after failing the first one and go on to be fit. So that's obviously what's happened here, and as Farrell said earlier, they're very confident that they're doing everything right by the player. A word on the Scotland team, Luke, and look, we'll touch a bit more on this Ireland-Scotland rivalry on our pod tomorrow. You know, it's been all Ireland. There's plenty of chat goes across the Irish Sea. I don't know, would you rather a Scotland team that was coming to Dublin off the back of a confidence-building win in Rome? Are you fearful of a backlash, or do you think whatever Scotland team confidence-wise you're getting, the Aviva might be a step too far? They brought in Stafford McDowell at 12 with Cam Redpath going to the bench.
Look, you can see a path to victory for them.
Lay that out.
The path to victory. Yeah. I think, to my mind, it probably lies in them probably not having as much of the game as people would think. I feel this Ireland pack and the bench should have too much for this Scotland pack, if I'm being completely honest. So I think Ireland will get more possession, likely to dominate territory. But if you think of the personalities involved, your Finn Russells, you know, your Van der Meuwer, your even Kinghorn at the back is very, very dangerous. Hugh Jones as well. They've got danger littered throughout that back line, and it only takes, if you go back to that English game, it only takes a moment, one mm-hmm. error, one sloppy bit of handling for one of these guys to run it in.
But execution's been their problem in Dublin, hasn't it? They've dropped balls over the line. If they can get that right,
there's a bit of that. But also, if you look at the games, I would generally feel like Ireland would have more of those games, and have pretty consistently won out the battle physically, particularly at ruck time. Scotland have when they're playing well, they have some great, your Darges and these guys really can disrupt ball and disrupt your kind of flow, and can give those backs, you know, turnover ball that they're very, very dangerous from, that Finn Russell kind of thrives off, these kind of unbroken, kind of phases of play, where, you know, his natural ability really shines through. Whereas Ireland are always very structured and organised. They make very few mistakes. Generally speaking, before the last couple of games in this competition, their discipline is usually excellent. So you don't get many penalties against them either. So I think off the back of all those things, while they've dropped a few over the line at crucial times, it wouldn't have really made a difference. I think Ireland have had way more of those games. I think their pack has dominated them. I think they've dominated them physically. I think the level of organisation that this Irish team has gives them less opportunity to show where they're strong off unbroken phase and unorganised phases of play with big runners like Van der Meyer run them in for 50 metres. It's rare you get those opportunities against Ireland. So I feel like that's why Ireland have been Scotland's thorn in the side, if you like, why they've had more success against very strong teams like France and things like that over a number of years. So I don't see that changing tomorrow. I feel like, I'd rather play them when they're high in confidence, but I do feel like there'll be a bounce back, similar to that Irish mentality. Generally, bounce back pretty well from a bad performance. So I expect a bit of that, and I expect them, Italy, to have showed up a few of those sloppy bits that Scotland can show at different times, like they showed against Ireland at the World Cup, you know, around discipline and around organisation, and just, I think, playing a smart game plan at different times of key moments and key games. I think they'll show that up a week before their biggest test of the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And I think that's not great timing from an Irish perspective.
For sure. And Ben White back in nine, which I think makes total sense. He's been a class act, and I think that's the right call for the Aviva. And just finally, Luke, on Scotland, you know, I remember being at Murrayfield at whatever it was, 7 o'clock local time, and you thought, oh, all is well in Scottish rugby. They've gone four in a row in the Calcutta Cup. Yes, they would have felt they were mugged in the France game. They could have been 3 from 3. Then they lose to Italy. It felt like a big balloon has been popped. How big a game is this for this whole Scotland setup, for this crop that have been talked about, understandably, as one of the best crops of Scotland players in a long, long time? For Gregor Townsend, who I think has done a great job with this side and taking them from one place to another. But if they come and get a big beating in the Aviva, there will be this feeling around Scottish rugby that's same old, same old. They need to try and buck that trend, don't they?
Yeah, look, I don't see it being a big loss tomorrow. I just feel like Ireland at home, well, I just think there'll be too much. Ireland are really, really difficult to turn over at home. They've got a brilliant, brilliant record, you know, over a long span of time at the Aviva. And I just feel like Scotland won't have enough to do it. But as I said, you could see a path to victory. If Ireland are sloppy, if their discipline is as bad as it has been, like Finn Russell's kicking at 100% so far in the competition, pretty good stats. So he could punish you there too. So there are ways for them to do it. I find it unlikely. I think Gregor Townsend has done a good job at the big hurdles. Like, they were very, very poor against Ireland at the World Cup. That was a real disappointment, because pretty similar crop of players here. You know, will they put that right tomorrow and kind of book this trend of this fixture? I don't see it at this point in time. I could see them being competitive, though. I think there'll be, as I said, a bit of a reaction from last week, and expect them to physically show up, which I think at times they haven't done the Aviva the last number of years. So I think it's going to be an enthralling one. But I see Ireland winning it comfortable enough without it being a blowout.
Yeah. What they have to do is put Ireland under pressure, don't they? Do what England did, but, you know, being in the Aviva, different kettle of fish potentially, but you never know when teams are put under pressure what can happen. Luke, great to see you. You're in your shirt and tie, dressed up for us.
Ran home from work.
Thought you would do this for the Rugby Union Daily.
No, look, thanks very much for having me on. Great to be on, and can't wait for a big weekend.
Brilliant. Right, from Dublin, we're going back to Lyon, where Sarah has the England fly half George Ford with her, and that is all after this.
Exciting times, Ellis.
Oh, is it? Why?
Well, our brand new podcast is here. 2 releases a week, and we get to leave behind the shackles of live radio and draconian vaping laws of Broadcasting House. Ellis, we are the pioneers of digital Britain, grasping the opportunity to redefine the audio landscape through powerful, impactful, dynamic conversation. You and I will inspire the next generation of free thinkers. What are your aims and aspirations for this new dawn?
I'll try to arrive on time and not eat mangoane.
You know what? I'll take that.
The Ellis James and John Robbins podcast. Out on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
George Ford, welcome to Lyon, fresh from the plane. We expect quite an atmosphere when you take on France anywhere, but what are you expecting come Saturday?
Yeah, no different, to be honest with you. Obviously, you know, whenever you play France away from home, and you ever play in Paris or we're here in Lyon, we expect nothing more than a brilliant atmosphere to play in, and the passion that the French public bring to watching the nation. Yeah, it's a great. It's, as a player, you love playing in them sorts of games. It's what you probably dream about as a kid, to play in them environments, them stadiums, them atmospheres. So we expect it's going to be like that on Saturday night, and hopefully, you know, we're going to be part of a brilliant game as well.
If I can just rewind to 2016 and a game you probably enjoyed in France, that was the Grand Slam win. You started that day, didn't you?
Yeah, remember that one obviously very fondly. It was the last game of the Six Nations, as is this one. Yeah, so obviously, like, memories like that when you win something and you win Grand Slams, they'll stick with you forever. So having said that, it's the last time we beat France in France, so it's a long time ago, and we want to sort of put that right this week, because it's a motivation for us that, you know, if we do that, it's obviously a great memory and experience to win away in France.
When you say about putting things right, I know you didn't play last year for the Twickenham game, but I know it's been discussed this week. What can you learn from what happened at Twickenham?
Well, we learned how dangerous the French team can be, and how dangerous, obviously, they are in certain areas of the game, and probably learnt a lot of maybe what not to do that day and what we need to do this week to try and get on top in the game, impose our game plan in the game. But having said that, look, it is 12 months on, isn't it? And we're probably both different teams now in different stages, and I think it's going to be a different game and a unique game in its own right, this one. But it certainly gives us some harsh lessons that day, which we'll obviously try and not make the same ones this weekend.
Could you give us a little bit of insight about Thomas Ramos? Because traditionally we've seen him wear 15 for France. I know he's been coming in a lot at 10 for Toulouse. But at international level, how big an ask is it that he's being asked to wear the 10 shirt?
I think if you play at fly half in any international game, it's always a big ask because of the responsibility you've got in the team, how integral and crucial you are to the way the team plays, but obviously as well the opposition are trying to put you under as much pressure as well. So I think he's a quality player. I think whether he's at fullback or whether he's at fly half, he seems calm, composed, makes good decisions. He's got obviously a great skill set with his run passing kicking game. So yeah, we understand both Thomas Ramos and Le Garrick at nine are going to be crucial to the way they play on Saturday night, so we're going to try and put them under pressure. And I suppose they'll be trying to do the same to us, so it's no different to what every other game's like, really.
How do you feel that always in France, it always seems to be the nine that's celebrated far more than the ten and the style of play that they adopt?
Yeah, I suppose they've had so many unbelievable world-class nines in the past who've made such a impact on the teams they've played in, and yeah, it just seems to be that way in France, where the nines are them guys, really. I suppose in England it's probably the other way around, where the tens probably the most talked about position. But at the end of the day, it's never about one person, one position. It's about the way the team performs, and for a guy to play well, scrum half, fly half, everything in and around them has got to work brilliantly, and everyone's got to do their job in their own right.
You talk about the 10 being the focus. A few things were written about you after the last game. Some would say some was a bit unfair. How did you think you went at Twickenham?
Was it? Yeah, I'm not too sure. I'm not read of it. I don't think any of that exterior stuff helps you in any way. I know the impact and the value up for my teammates and coaches know I have on this team. So, look, it was one of the best wins we've had at Twickenham for a long time. You're a big part of that. You play in that. So, couldn't have been that bad, I suppose.
And on that, what does it mean to you that you get to start in this final game?
Yeah, look, I'm just excited again to be part of this team to hopefully improve the performance from last week. That's what we want to do. There's a few motivating factors for us. One is backing last week up and being better. Another is trying to win away in France that we've not done for a long time. And obviously the last one is we've still got a chance of winning the tournament. So, yeah, plenty for us to go for.
There's a huge amount going on Saturday. Nonetheless, your birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'd ask what you've got planned, but I know what you're doing on the day itself.
Yeah.
Do you know if the boys have got anything lined up for you?
No, probably not. Maybe after the game there might be a bit of a birthday cake or something. But
Who does the birthday cakes? Because there's some good cakes I've seen out there.
The chef usually makes them, to be fair.
Do you get to request?
Sometimes not. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think obviously the main focus will be the game, so we'll see. Hopefully we get a win and we could have some cake after.
Now, the other thing is I do also understand that, am I right in saying you have a due date for your first child imminently?
Yeah.
Is that Saturday as well?
Could be any time from now, I think. So, yeah, obviously massively exciting. It's just one of them. It could happen any time. So,
If the call comes in, are you going?
Well, it depends when it is, obviously, but my wife's, she's been brilliant and amazing at home and dealing with it all, so she's got a good family around her, but yeah, again, let's hope it's a situation where we get the game out of the way and we get a good win and I can get back to her and, yeah, the baby arrives.
And on that, if you did win, how hard are you allowed to celebrate?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I think personally for me, I'm going pretty much first thing Sunday morning anyway, regardless. So not too hard, because I will have a plane to catch, I suppose. But it'd be great, because it's obviously the last game with this group of lads in this tournament, and we want to end on a high. So you've got to enjoy each other's company as well.
I wish you all the best, and I hope you have a very calm 48 hours.
Thank you very much.
Five Lives Rugby Union Daily.
So, Sarah, how old's George Ford going to be on? He's going to be 31, is he?
Yeah, 31. Good stats as ever, Mr. Yeah. Jones. We did actually have a debate here. I won't tell you how old our producer, Victoria, actually thought George Ford was going to be, because I think he'd be highly offended.
Oh, okay, well, what's offensive? Being told he was 35 or 25?
It was the higher number,
okay,
is all I'll
well,
say.
But that was kind of my point. It's like, you know, you've been doing this job a while and you remember George Ford's debut. You remember him coming on the scene as a teenager. And then you see him, you know, develop into, you know, this 90 capper, kid on the way, and sort of all the circle of life stuff. But, you know, as we touched upon the front of the pod, he missed a few kicks, Ford, but I think he's well and truly justified his selection, first over Finn Smith and then latterly over Marcus Smith. And as it stands, I think Ford starting the game, Marcus Smith coming on, whether that's at 10, whether that's at 15, he's got the versatility to do both. I think at the moment, that's the kind of the right combination for this England fly half shirt.
I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because I asked that question, of course, to George Ford that you just heard about some of the criticism that came his way that I think most of us thought was quite unjust. You know,
I don't
a fly
think there
half,
was much. I mean, maybe the odd article, but in general, I think most people
exactly
would have seen a guy who played a really decent game. Yeah,
precisely. And there was absolutely no reason for Steve Borthwick to bring in Marcus Smith for this fixture. And a little bit that keeps on niggling away to me at the back of my mind, and I've spoken about this with Jamie George today a little bit earlier, I grabbed him as well. I alluded to it a bit with George Ford, although he didn't play in the game. Let us not forget, this fixture at Twickenham last year was a horror show for England. That was the time when it was the big moment. Marcus Smith was going to get his game. He was going to start. Farrell was put on the bench for that one. Of course, Ford was OA injured in that campaign. But that was France's biggest ever test win over England, 53 points to 10. And I've been told today they have watched that back this week. So I think they know, regardless of whatever happens, they cannot let something like that happen ever again.
Yeah, and whatever gets them going. Obviously, the stick they took in Ireland week was a motivating factor. And, you know, if they haven't had any of that stick, the complete opposite, that revenge mission on the French is probably a fairly powerful, motivating tool. And as Ben Earl said on the pod earlier in the week, very few England players have won in France. You know, George Ford would have been one of very few who won the Slam in 2016. But there aren't many of those guys left around. You know, Danny Kerr scored a try. Elliot Daly was, I think, in the wider 25. Obviously, Dan Cole also scored a try that day. But there's been a lot of movement in that England side since. So a chance for them to make their own bit of history. We haven't laid out the permutations. I think everyone knows them by now. I don't want to dwell on the permutations because I really don't. I hope we don't have a situation where Ireland get a losing bonus point and still win the title with three wins. You know my thoughts on bonus points. I'd hate a scenario where Ireland are 10 points down and kick a penalty to lose by 7 and win the title. But anyway, probably unlikely. We know it's very much in Ireland's hands.
But on the whole bonus point thing, Chris, as much as I do agree with you, it would be wrong if this scenario does come about, that Ireland end up lifting the trophy with three, if England were to go on and get four. I'm totally on board with you. But I do believe that the bonus points do add that bit extra. I was in Dublin for that game between Ireland and Wales. Ireland were playing right up until the last minute because they wanted that bonus point. I think that game could have been dead and buried by half time otherwise. So they do serve a purpose, but yes, for this unique circumstance that we now find ourselves in, they do cause a problem, but they do still have plenty of worth in other scenarios. So there are two sides of the argument. And I was sat around a table with the Six Nations chief exec Tom Harrison just in the last 24 hours, and he said, look, I don't think they're going to change, but if we think they're a problem, we will look at it. They are not looking at it now. I don't think they see it as an issue.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. I totally hear you when there are situations where the bonus point helps. I would argue the Six Nations is too short a tournament. I don't think it needs bonus points. I think they're great over a long 18-20-22 match campaign. And I suppose I couldn't believe, I understand why people were messaging me this, but I couldn't believe the number of messages I got from people saying, why did Marcus Smith drop a goal rather than try to, I mean, and I'm thinking, they've got a chance to beat one of the best sides in the world at Twickenham, having not pulled out that kind of performance and not really toppled a big gun in world rugby for years and years. England haven't beaten one of the best. Drew with New Zealand, got close against South Africa, took care of business against Argentina and Fiji. But in terms of one of the best around, they hadn't beaten one of them for a while, probably going back 2021, France and South Africa. And the thought that they weren't going to try and go all out for the win and even think about four tries for me was just mind-blowing. It's a valid point people have made. I just don't think they're right for the Six Nations. Let's hope they're not a big talking point after this weekend. And I completely hear the Ireland fans are probably screaming at their headphones going, oh, you know, we're playing to the rules. Don't try and change rules halfway through. I'm not. I've said this about bonus points from day dot. It's just we might get this slightly peculiar situation where Ireland can win the title with fewer wins than another team, which would be, I think, a bit peculiar.
And Chris, I can confirm, as a long-time listener to the Rugby Union Weekly / Daily, I have heard you bang on about it for many years now,
and
so don't worry.
Everyone.
Exactly.
So let's move on. Sorry, I'm going to read out one message we got in. I really wished I'd done this with Ben Earl the other day. Oh, by the way, if you've not heard the Martin Johnson England-France rivalry pod, it's a really good listen. Johnson is just in fantastic form. His recall is amazing. You just see his love of the game, his love of the Six Nations, his love of French rugby just oozing out. So do get that if you really want to get in the mood for the crunch on Sunday night. But I want to read this from Chris Ryan because it kind of sums up what it's all about. He says, hi, Chris. Listen to the pod since 2019. Always a bright spot in my week. I was privileged to take my 8-year-old son, Arthur, to Twickenham this weekend for his first international, and I've managed to spoil him for life. It was the greatest of days, and I'm still feeling the emotion of it 4 days later. It's not been the easiest few years to be an England fan, so it was extra special, especially as I spent the previous 2 weeks preparing for a beating. Amazing to see Danny get his 100th cap as well, and also this week to hear Tom English graciously munch on his humble pie. Please give a shout out on the next pod to Arthur, to Hazelmere under nines, and my wife and daughter who are Ireland fans. That's from Chris Ryan. You kind of got a bit of everything about the Six Nations in that message, haven't you?
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. And look, the biggest thing about what happened last weekend is, one, it was exciting, but two, the jeopardy that it's given us for this weekend. It's a new narrative. It's a new talking point. We're not just talking about, you know, this has been an average Six Nations. You touched on this in the Nations pod in particular earlier this week that came out on Tuesday. You talked about it with Tom English and Gro. This has made this Six Nations so exciting. And this is what we want. We didn't care which team it was that stepped up. I mean, Italy provided that in spades in the last week as well. So, yeah, hopefully Super Saturday also delivers.
Let's see and let's hope, as you say. Right, Wales against Italy, coverage on Sports Extra. Ireland against Scotland, we start on Sports Extra. We move over to 5 Live at the end of the football, around about 5 o'clock. And then 5 Live as well for Sarah, Chris Ashton and Matt Dawson out in Lyon for France against England. Hopefully a brilliant weekend of rugby, or a brilliant day of rugby on Saturday. One more pod on the way tomorrow. We'll be in Dublin, we'll be in Lyon, and we'll be looking ahead to it all. Cheers, Sarah. Enjoy the gastronomic capital of the world. Don't let this opportunity, no room service, no hotel food.
No, I'm off.
I want a restaurant, pub, restaurant crawl all over Lyon.
I'm off for dinner. Bye.
Okay, report back. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Grab your VIP pass. We're delving into the secretive world of Formula One. Behind the scenes with two of the sport's biggest names, Mercedes and Williams.
This is not coal mining, this is Formula One motor racing.
As they build their new cars,
we want to be so much further ahead.
And face shocking headlines.
Here's Lewis Hamilton moving away from Mercedes.
I'm Joseph Fiennes, and from BBC Radio 5 Live, this is F1, back at base. Listen on BBC Sounds.